the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. If you've been listening to the program for a long period of time, you'll know that we quite frequently discuss retirement studies. There is no lack of them, quite a few, as a matter of fact. And generally, if we had to strum an overall arching theme, they don't portend well for the future of many retirees now or in the future. Most of these studies list how Americans are not prepared for retirement. Number one, they haven't saved enough. Number two, they don't have a secure pension outside of Social Security. Number three, they're living longer. They're hoping to do so, and health is allowing us to do that. Number four, we have rising medical expenses eating away at their budgets, even if they have planned. And number five, a lot of people are just going to wind up broke. So where does that leave us, Jim?
Well, it's interesting because last week on the program, I interviewed Alicia Manel, who was an advisor to President Obama on Social Security. She's a professor at Boston College, and she was co-author with two other professors writing a book called Falling Short, The Coming Retirement Crisis and What to Do About It. And John, what I loved about the book is she narrowed it down to three options. It's not very complicated. Number one, you accept a lower standard of living during retirement. You're not going to have your wages. You're not going to have the income you had when, let's say, you or both of your spouses were working. Number two, you need to save more. And number three, you're going to end up working longer, which makes a lot more sense given the fact that you're living longer and you're going to live a more productive life. So it's basically that simple, and there's very few options to consider outside those three. You'll have politicians telling you there's things the government can do. Well, I got news for you. There are things that the government's not going to be able to do, and that's what Manel talks about in her book, The Coming Crisis That We're Going to See with Social Security and Medicare. And we'll get into that as we get later on into this broadcast. It was interesting because I recently interviewed Dr. A. Gary Schilling on the Premium Channel and his February Insight magazine devoted half the issue to the aging boomers and the implications for Social Security, Medicare, and retirement. So this is an issue, John. The politicians aren't talking about it, but it's lurking out there and it's not going away. And the longer they take to address it, the worse it's going to be.
And it's a shame because so many people in the private sector depend on Social Security because they don't have a 401k or other pension in the private sector.
Yeah, and the problem that we're having is Social Security is replacing less of our pre-retirement income. The traditional defined benefit plans have been replaced, and so that is making more and more individuals dependent on Social Security. Here's the problem. Social Security begins to run out of money by 2027, and what that means is they're going to have to reduce benefits by 25% unless they fix it. So, John, there is a crisis brewing out there that we're going to be facing in the next decade.
Let's, for just a second, I know we've talked a lot about it on other shows, let's zoom in on Social Security because this is the area where most people rely for income in retirement.
You know, here's the problem with Social Security. It was never a funded pension system, like the money that you put aside for your 401k. You know the size of it. You know pretty much what it's going to be by the time you get to retire. It was a pay-as-you-go system. Now, when they put it in place, I forget what it was. There was like 15, 20 workers for every one person retired. The nation was a lot younger back then. And what we've seen here now is they have a lot of bonds or IOU bonds in their file drawer, and they've been selling off those bonds or those IOUs. And the problem is by 2027, they run out of these things. So what that means is if we were to maintain our Social Security benefits, the Social Security Department would have to go to the Treasury to have the Treasury make up the difference, which means it would have to come out of the government's budget. And so there is an issue. And unless money is taken from the Treasury, which would be hard pressed when you consider the size of the deficits beginning next year. They're going to be back up to $1 trillion, and we're not even in a recession or a crisis yet. And we're going to be running these $1 trillion deficits, and they're going to get bigger and bigger as a result of, in Gary Schilling's newsletter, he talked about a statistic that was remarkable. Every year for the next 15 years, there's going to be 1.5 million Americans reaching the age of 70. So there is a fix that is going to have to be put in place. And there are a number of things that they're considering, John. Number one, they've already done this for you and I, where they raise the full retirement age of Social Security all the way up to 67. For you and I, it was 66. So given the fact that a male age 65 has a life expectancy of 19 years, and a female age 65 has a life expectancy of 21 years. So men and women are living into their 80s. So one fix is to postpone the full retirement age, raise it from 67, raising it to age 70, which makes a lot of sense given the life expectancy that people are living longer. And the second one, which would be a bad one, is to raise taxes even further, which is probably they're more likely to do. The problem is the replacement rates for our income are falling as fewer and fewer workers are out there supporting the retired as a population age. You remember, John, a lot of the books that came out in the 70s, The Club of Rome, The Population Time Bomb by Paul Ehrlich, you know, really forecasting just a Malthusian famine with population. And so what happened is in the Western world, we began to contract in terms of births. And now the generation behind the boomers is a smaller generation. What does that mean when you're running a system like Social Security, which is a pay-as-you-go system? You need more workers. And if the birth rates decline, that means fewer and fewer workers. There's like 3 workers now, and it's going to drop down to 2.5 and 2. That puts an inordinate amount of stress on the system in existing workers, because, you know, you take a look at Social Security taxes, which are 15.3%. Half of that is the worker. Half of it is in the employer. And if you're self-employed, you pay both. Then on top of that, once you surpass the Social Security limit, you have additional Medicare taxes that kicks in. So most workers, you know, when you take a look at retirement today, they're heavily dependent on Social Security and their 401k plans that they have at work, if they've been contributing. And as Manel talks about in her book, the average size of a 401k, and only about 50% of Americans have them, is about $111,000. And if you were to take a 4% withdrawal rate, John, you know, that's a little over $350 a month. That sure in the heck is not going to put you in Beverly Hills or the Hamptons.
The other issue that, it's ironic, has not been addressed very recently that I can think of in the public media is the fact that the government is going to start reneging on its promises. As a matter of fact, it's already starting to do that. It just does it very quietly. It's extended the Social Security age to age 67. Medicare has become a 4-tiered pricing system depending on your income. You can pay 4 times the average, depends on which bracket you're in. They are raising co-pays and deductibles as well. It isn't paying as much as they used to. More of the expenses are going to be passed on to you in the future, because government is, you know, you're in the end throes of this little social experiment we really began with Lyndon Johnson and the Great Society. And the Great Society is basically running out of money.
And I want to add a little bit of reinforcing data to this. And my friend Gary Schilling, in his latest Insight newsletter for the month of February, devoted half the issue to these very topics about aging populations, not only just here and globally, and the strain on pension systems. We're going to be doing a number of interviews upcoming in FS Insider that point to this, and especially in my own state of California, which is grossly underfunded. I mentioned earlier, in the next 15 years, 1.5 million boomers will turn age 70. And according to the demographics, by the year 2060, 70 year olds will make up 18% of the population. And this phenomenon is global. It's actually higher in Europe, and in Japan. All of this points to the paradigm shift to make it through retirement. It is going to require the three things that Manel talked about in her book, Falling Short. You're going to have to work longer. Number two, having to work longer, you're going to have to save more, and working longer will allow you to do that. Number three, you're going to have to actively manage your portfolio. Working longer, and in many cases part-time, is probably, John, one of the most effective strategies. I mean, why not? Number one, the longer you work, that is fewer years that you need to draw down on your portfolio. Number two, by working longer, it enables you to save more. Those are more years you're spent working, more years you're going to be contributing to, let's say, a 401k program or some other kind of program that allows you to save for retirement. Number three, you're actually better off health-wise. It's been shown in studies, people that work longer live longer. They're more productive. And so it's actually a healthy thing. So I'm not sure in many ways that this is going to be a bad thing. By working longer, you save more. The two go hand in hand. Option three, and this is something that is very, very important. If you're listening to this program and you've just witnessed what we've seen in the market here in the last 2 weeks, actively managing your portfolio. You can't afford bear market risk. We've already had two of them. You saw that with the bursting of the tech bubble in 2000 and the Great Recession in 2007, where the S&P 500 lost nearly 60% of its value. You cannot afford to go through that major drawdown at the beginning years of your retirement. And I want to put that in perspective. Let's say you're in a bond fund or you're in a passive index fund and your advisor has you on a 4% withdrawal rate. Or let's just make it easy. You have a $100,000 portfolio, you're taking out 4%, and all of a sudden, you're in a bear market, and you lose half that amount. So now, instead of $100,000, you're down to $50,000. Imagine what you're doing, drawing 4% at that 4% rate. You're really now drawing out 8%, and it won't be too long before you run out of money. So this idea of passive investing is not going to work, as we have been warning listeners. The recent rout shows what happens when this thing finally unwinds. And the other thing, too, is we know that all the recessions since World War II have been preceded by Fed rate-raising cycles. There was only once, at least in my career, where they raised rates and they didn't crash the economy, and that was in 1994. But outside of 1994, every rate-raising cycle ended up in a recession. So what do you know now? You know right now that markets are elevated. Number two, you know the Fed is in a rate-raising cycle. What will that lead to? They have a track record, almost 95% guaranteed to crash the economy. They're not very good at soft landing. So you know we're in this cycle. So that is telling you somewhere down the road, next year, year after, I don't know. But we know sooner or later, they're going to raise rates to the point where it has an impact on the economy. And if the economy goes into recession, those are when you experience the worst bear markets in financial assets.
We've talked about this too, about drawdowns and sequence risk. You need to avoid a bear market because most boomers can't afford another type of bear market such as 2007. It would just bust them.
Yeah. And the important thing to understand is something that most boomers have not seen. You know, I started my career when the last bear market in bonds was ending. It began in the late 50s, continued all the way until August of 1981. We used to call bonds at that time certificates of confiscation. And right now, in our opinion, we are beginning a new bear market in bonds. We've seen interest rates bottom out in 2016, where they got down to about 1.3%. In the fall of last year, they got down. The 10-year treasury was at 2%. Today, we're closer to 2.9%. In fact, one of the things I was talking to Gary Schilling when I recently interviewed him on FS Insider, because he's always been a bull on treasury bonds, but he said there's a point now with rising deficits, stimulus, and maybe an upward tick in inflation where rates could head higher. And the real issue here for many retirees is the bulk of their retirement wealth is in bond funds, and they lose money as interest rates rise. So you need to manage a different strategy when it comes to your bond portfolio going forward, because we are entering a bear market. It's not going to happen overnight. Bear markets and bonds are not like stocks. They happen over a long period of time, usually decades. The last bear market ended in 1981. We've been in a 36-year period of falling interest rates. And the problem is, so many individuals have their money in these passive bond funds, which will not work in this kind of environment.
And so what this does is this takes us back to the mainstays of every retiree's retirement plan. Social Security, that's for the source of income, a steady stream of it, and Medicare, and that's to take care of the medical expenses.
And this is something investors and listeners should take very serious, because if you look at Medicare, it is in worse shape than Social Security. We've already made changes when you talk about John reneging. We've gone from, it used to be up until Part D prescription was added, we had a one-tiered pricing system. In other words, whatever rate Medicare charged, it was the same rate for everybody. Now, just like income taxes, based on your income, there's a different tiered approach. There's four different tiers to Medicare pricing. Depending on your income, if you're fortunate enough to have more income, you could end up paying four times the amount for your Medicare premiums. Number two, we saw it happen this year. They're increasing higher copays, which means whether it's a doctor's visit, some kind of procedure that you have done, you are going to be paying more as part of that. And then the other thing they're also doing at the same time is they're raising the deductibles. I think it's $1,350 this year, and that has been going up at high single digits per year. So you've already got a glimpse over the last decade in terms of what they're doing to put more and more of this burden on your shoulders. And the other thing that we've got going, and this is where the government is going to come under strain, is more people age and retire. That means more people are drawing on Social Security, more people are using Medicare. And this is, you know, between Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the debt, that is 70% of the government's budget. And that percentage is going to increase going forward. Beginning in 2019, we're projected to go back and hit a $1 trillion deficit. And what makes that a little bit frightening is we're not even in a recession yet. And when you're in a recession, what happens to all governments? Revenues drop and expenditures go up because they're paying unemployment claims. They're paying Medicaid, which is an insurance program that people that don't have insurance and are without income, you have some kind of medical care. So those kind of claims go up, which means in the next recession, we could be looking at almost $1.7 trillion deficits. All of this is going to put strains on the system, which is why Manel in her book, Falling Short, talks about we better start thinking about this now, because by 2027, we're going to be in big trouble.
You know, in all reality, Jim, the problem we're facing today across a panoply of different issues, but it applies to Social Security, is that as soon as you try to deal with something, immediately the politicos jump into a whole form of demagoguery, and then the reality of situations can't be dealt with. And so historically, what politicians prefer to do is they wait until something breaks, begin pointing the fingers at somebody else to make sure they're not blamed for it, and then pose themselves as the answer to a problem which they allowed to be created.
Well, unfortunately, that's the way the political system runs. But, you know, heads up, this is going to be front and center in crisis in the next decade. You know, we may be able to postpone doing anything about it, but the longer we postpone, the worse it's going to be. The important thing is, if you are planning for retirement, don't be completely dependent on the government, because as we've just explained, more and more of the responsibility for your own health care and also your own income is going to be shouldered by yourself. And that's why you need to start planning. You know, they're going to end up doing something. More likely, John, given that life expectancies are increasing, they will probably increase the beginning ages for Social Security to 65, full benefits at age 70, just like today at 62 and 67. The other thing, they're likely to eliminate the caps on Social Security taxes on your income. So if you're Larry lots of bucks making good income, you're going to be in a 60 to 70% tax bracket probably sometime in the next decade. The other thing they're going to do in looking at is implement a means test for benefit. So if you look at the way Social Security was put into place, it was tax-free income. You put money into the system. When you retired, you took money out. It was non-taxable. Beginning in the 80s, 50% of your benefits were subject to income tax. Then Bill Clinton came in 1993 with a massive tax increase. And at that time, they raised the amount of your Social Security that could be subject to income taxes to 85%, which is where it lies today. So they could do something like make 100% based on your income, 100% of your Social Security benefits subject to income tax. And more importantly, as the system comes under strain, they may do just like they do with taxes. They may start phasing out part of your Social Security benefits based on a certain level of income, the way that we have seen this tiered system take place with not only Social Security in terms of how it's taxed, but also with Medicare in terms of how much you pay in Medicare premiums. So this is coming. And you need to be thinking about it now. If you're 5-10 years away from retirement, you don't want to be in the next decade. We're in crisis mode, and all of a sudden you're facing retirement. So the best thing I can tell you right now, make plans yourself to take care of yourself, and don't rely on the government, because you're going to be disappointed.
So just like Manel and her book Falling Short, the individual is going to have to rethink how to deal with retirement. What's going on now is not going to last. And that means people will have to work longer. They're going to have to save more and lower their standard of living ultimately.
And John, they're going to have to save more. And here's something that we'll cover this probably in the months of April and May as we get close to graduation. What happens to most parents, they start out, you know, their first goal is to maybe own and buy a home. After that is to save for their college education. And then the third priority is for their own retirement. And a lot of money has been spent on college. And a lot of parents will go into debt. They'll take out second mortgages. And instead of trying to put together a reasonable budget for their kids. You know, we're a big advocate here on the program of what I call the 2+2 system. And that is 2 years at a junior college. Junior lives at home. 2 years at a state college. You can get a 2-year degree at a junior college for under $6,000 and probably $10,000-$15,000 a year for a, let's say, state school. That is certainly a lot more affordable than sending junior away to a state school or out of state school where you could be spending $20,000-$25,000 or probably $40,000 or $50,000 if you're talking about an A-rated school. And this drains so much of the income that could be put aside and saved for retirement. So you're going to have to also not only think your own retirement, but also rethink college cost. And we covered on the program Praxis, which is a vocational study program where basically you learn and earn while you're on the job, like an apprenticeship. So instead of going into debt when you start college, you actually earn money, come out of the program after a year and have a paying job. And the average starting salary is somewhere around $50,000. So we're really going to have to rethink how this works. And also thinking about working longer. I have a client. We're in the third generation with this family. His father was originally my client. His father referred me to him. Now he was a doctor. And when I did his financial plan in the 80s, we wanted to save for a couple things: his kids' bar mitzvah, their college education, their weddings, and his own retirement. Now back then, his goal was to have $1 million when he retired. Now, when you think about it, now think back in 1983 and 84, $1 million, I could have got you 14% in something like a government Ginnie Mae. So he was thinking $1 million where interest rates were double digits, he would have an income somewhere between $140,000, $150,000 a year. When it came time to retire at age 65, he had a little over $2 million, close to 2.5. And basically, he chose to put himself in a better position, he chose to work part-time for the next 5 years, in which he could live off what he was making. That allowed him to travel and do the things, his hobbies, and do the things that he wanted to do. But more importantly, when he did officially retire, when he was 70 and a half and began to withdraw on his pension plan, he had almost $3.5 million. In other words, the extra 5 years in a bull market added another $1 million to his portfolio. So you combine that with Social Security and he's got the income that he needs. So it can actually be a good thing.
And the investment environment is much different today. The returns are lower. The interest rates are down much more than they were, say, at the beginning of the century. But it sounds like we're talking about the beginning of the 20th century, down at the beginning of the 21st century. And the investment environment, let's face it, it's a little more hostile and turbulent than it was before.
It is, and that's why you're going to have to take a more active role in managing your assets. We're in a rising interest rate environment, which is bad for bond funds. We're in a low return environment. I mean, up until about just 2 years ago, we witnessed the lowest interest rate in recorded human history. It's hard to think, and it still exists today, that a couple of years ago, one-third of sovereign debt was negative, meaning you paid the government to loan them money. And interest rates in Europe are still, many sovereigns are negative. So we're in a low return environment, and we know now when we're 9 years into this recovery, sooner or later, we're going to have face a recession and a severe bear market, which is another reason why you have to be active today. You can't just get caught up in this, you know, what I call pie chart mentality. You allocate so much money to different areas, you leave it there and you just passively sit back. You don't want to do that. It didn't work in 2000. It didn't work in 2007.
Like Congress. Okay. Yeah. So I guess the message of this whole thing is it's time to start now. As we've always said on the show, you need a plan because it's going to be your GPS guide map to your retirement. You can make modifications to the plan as you go along based on circumstances, but it's better to do it now rather than wait until the crisis hits, which is, as I think we mentioned earlier, Jim, I think that's exactly what Congress is going to wait to do before they try to deal with it.
Well, I mean, Congress being what it is and the Fed being what it is, just know this, that we're 9 years into this business recovery, 9 years into this bull market. If it lasts to the end of the year, beginning of next year, it'll be the longest business recovery in bull market in the history of this country. So know this, it is coming sooner or later. We're going to have another bear market, another recession, and know this as well. In the next decade, a crisis is coming to the retirement market as entitlements come under stress because of lack of funding. And that is coming. And there's no way to get around it. And as you just mentioned, John, they will not do anything about it. They don't want to talk. It's demagogued if you bring the issue up, as several presidents have done, and they just got smacked for doing it. And so they'll wait till a crisis erupts. And that's when they'll deal with it. The problem is you don't want to be there and wait for it to happen before you do something in advance. And the time, if you're getting ready to retire, if you're 5 years, 10 years away, or even now in retirement, be prepared and have a plan.
Reminder that tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest is Cameron Sorsby from Praxis. And Jim, now time for our real life case study. And during our real life case study, this is an hypothetical illustration based on real life examples. Names and circumstances have been changed, and we do have slides online at financialsense.com, which illustrate the points Jim is making. So who do we have this week?
This week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to show this case study illustrates the chances for a successful retirement. We have software that we use in the planning process, and it takes the inputs, you know, your income sources, your expenses, and your life expectancy, because we go through this health questionnaire, and it basically says, hey, how successful will you be in retirement? Is there a risk of running out of money? And so that's what I want to illustrate with this case. This case, we'll call Robert and Sue Crowder. Robert is age 61. Sue is age 58. They want to retire in about 5 or 6 years. Life expectancy for both of them are about 90. longevity runs on both sides of the family, and basically real conservative. Their goals were preservation of capital. Robert was an architect. He enjoyed a career as a civil engineer. He and his wife have relished spending their money and recently just purchased a new home. So they have never lived off a budget, which is key here. And we'll come back to this in a second. And savings they've accumulated over the years have been kept mostly in cash. Basically, didn't pay a lot of attention to the markets. And of course, the two bear markets that we had at the beginning of this new century. And of course, the big financial crisis basically kind of reinforced, hey, we'll keep it in the bank. You know, at least I don't have to worry about it. Sue, on the other hand, was an office manager for a local consulting firm. She became restless in their current line of work. She's ready to retire, but she's unsure if they will have the money to do so. She wants to go on vacations with her husband and do the things they kind of dreamed about, and having more time for leisure and travel, doing basically what a lot of people do in retirement when you don't have to punch the clock or you only have a couple of weeks out of the year for a vacation. You know, take a trip. Go take a trip for a couple of weeks and not worry about getting back. What was important to both of them, and this was going to be a key as we continue to kind of drive this home. Hey, look, you guys haven't operated on a budget. You've saved money. You just put it in the bank. But we really need to take a look at a budget. What does it cost you to live and get you through retirement? Because you're going to have a lot of money you're going to end up spending in medical, and longevity runs on both sides of your family. So looking at a budget, managing their expenses, in saving for retirement, because they were looking at, as we mentioned, for both of them, full retirement age would be a little over 66 years of age, halfway between 66 and 67. Looking at their budget, $55,000 was the essential budget. And this was something, by the way, they had never done before. And it was kind of really an eye-opener as they took a look at what did it really cost them to live. Discretionary spending was about $35,000. So they were coming in with about $90,000. Robert's salary was $50,000. Sue's salary was $45,000. So they had a surplus of about $5,000 a year. Looking at retirement, what would change? That budget would drop from about $90,000 to $85,000. Their pension would be 18, Social Security would be 41, so they would have a shortfall here of over $25,000. And so what we did is we took a look at their assets. Their house was $450,000, of which they still owed about $120,000 in a mortgage. Taxable accounts, they had about $125,000 in cash. And in Robert's retirement, in his 401k, he only had $80,000. And in Sue's, she only had $75,000. So not a lot to work with here in terms of living and making up that short gap of over $25,000 a year for retirement. The challenges here, high discretionary expenses, no budget, and maximizing retirement income. And basically, everything was in cash, no diversification for retirement. What we suggested was moving into a balanced portfolio, since they were only 6 to 7 years away from retirement, more likely closer to 7. And that would produce investment income of about $10,000. This still left us with the shortfall of $17,000, even if they continued to save at their present pace. So we had a big shortfall here that we had to basically get through. What we did is we worked with them to develop a budget and understand the importance of maintaining an itemized budget so they had a better grasp of where their money went each month. Our analysis showed that controlling expenses would have the biggest impact on their ability to retire. Now, after developing a budget, we advised them to cut their monthly expenses by reducing the big one. Discretionary was almost as much as their fixed budget, and saving and putting the extra money into retirement. The other thing we said is, based on their current standing, we advised that Robert continue working until age 70 and that Sue find part-time work until Robert was fully retired. Now, that was going to do a number of things. By working to age 70, his Social Security would increase by 32%, which means it would be more for Sue as well. It would also give them more years to save and put money aside. So this idea that they were going to be able to retire in 5 or 6 years, we had to be blunt with them and say, it's not going to work. The money isn't there, and your expenses just wouldn't allow for it. So there was going to be a major shift in what we did. So basically, John, this was by lowering their expenses dramatically, and they cut their expenses by almost 20%. So we were lowering expenses. Number two, that allowed for an increase of savings. And number three, we postponed retirement for 4 years in the case of Robert. And we also suggested part-time employment for Sue. But by doing that, we were able to take their chances of success from below 50% to as high as 90%. And this is something that we talked on the program. You're going to see more and more in the retirement crisis. People are going to end up working longer, and they're going to have to save more, as we did with one of the authors, Professor Monell from Boston University. So here was a case, by just implementing those two factors, it changed the retirement outcome to a higher degree of success.
And coming up on the program tomorrow, Cameron Sorsby from Praxis. Jim, what are we looking forward to in the weeks to come? Anything exciting?
As we get closer into tax season, we're going to be talking about some strategies. I don't really think a lot of people have been fully impacted yet. Now, you should, if you're working, you should have seen an increase in your take-home pay as they adjusted payroll withholding beginning in the month of February. So outside seeing this adjustment, I don't think people have really absorbed yet the various changes that came about with this tax bill this year, especially when it comes to itemized deductions. We'll be talking more about that, strategies, and also education, as it is getting closer in the next couple of months. We'll have another batch of students graduating from high school and on to college. All of that in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.